that we live in and how women and gender oppressed minorities are faced with this daily reality. And even if they haven't been faced with each facet of this horrific system of oppression, I'm sure one of their close friends, close relatives have been, and they've faced the emotional burden of dealing with that as well, because that's another point of oppression, that they face this intense form of emotional care.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then we talk about misandry, which is critiquing the system, which is decentering men, which is kind of establishing this this anger and this fuel to fight this system. In no way is misandry based in a structural inequality. In no way is the burdens that men face at all to the same graveness that women face. When we talk about the patriarchy, it is, of course, abhorrent to all genders. It is a gender oppressive system. Gender itself, as it's been created, is there to divide us. Of course, we can't emphasize that enough. But when we look at how men are in this patriarchal system in a powerful position, in no way is misandry at all equal whatsoever. And in no way should misandry be made illegal. When you critique a group that is powerful, of course misandry is going to be proposed to be made illegal by the people in power. That makes so much sense, because of course you want to suppress any sort of criticism of the system, and you want to kind of paint it as some angry, you know, hate filled like violent group that is like a radical group that is going to inflict horrific things on the population. Like, of course you want to paint it as something that is, I guess, putting it in the realm of illegality points it in a sort of direction that kind of separates it from the mainstream, and not in a way that could not benefit it, if that makes sense, because it kind of isolates it and puts it to the fringes. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm interested to know, like, what they're considering making illegal with misandry, because I don't think that the focus should be on misandry necessarily, like, if we're talking about men's rights and things like that. There are... You know, there are some structural things, but they are, like Logan was saying, more a result of the patriarchy than misandry itself, so...
Yeah, misandry doesn't cause, like, this emotional... Yeah, that's a really good point. Like, misogyny is the, like, a lot of the, like, the manifestation of the patriarchy,
mm-hmm.
while misandry is sort of a rejection of that.
Yeah.
And so, exactly, yeah, misogyny should be made illegal because it kind of reinforces this structural system of oppression, while misandry doesn't at all.
Yeah. Can you, Rebecca, was there anything saying, like, what was the debate with making things with misandry illegal? Were there specific things they were trying to call out, or just in
general?
It
was more like, so, it was an article written by a guy that was saying, like, the microaggressions that men face are like hidden and downplayed by the like over reporting of the aggressions that women are facing. So he like posed the example of like men being called, like women calling men like man whores or like womanizers, and shaming them in that way wasn't getting the attention that it would have got if it was like a man saying to a woman like, you're sleeping around, like shameful of that in that aspect. And like,
that should be a hate crime.
Wow. And like he was okay. Like saying, because like all of this is like for the male side, it's like the same, but it's not getting its recognition.
Right,
and he
okay.
was like, so if one's being classified legally as a hate crime, the other should be too, because it's the same thing.
I wish he was in this room right now. Okay, okay, so yeah. Because in what way is that structural?
Mm-hmm.
When you look at this sort of slut-shaming culture, mm-hmm. what is that like rooted in. It is rooted in woman is object and woman is like kind of she's taking more sexual autonomy for herself potentially. Mm. But when you look at like critiquing a guy for sleeping around with a lot of women, that's about critiquing this sort of objectification that he's doing, this sort of like a lot of men I talk to who have slept with a lot of women, it's like this very like sexualized language, and you can see in this like it's rooted in this one dimensionality a lot of times of women, and so it kind of furthers that objectification. But when
I think that might be the case with some men with sleeping around with a lot of women, but at this point I don't know if I can generalize to say like this when sleeping around with a lot of women is another stream of misogyny in a way, but I definitely do think that there is a completely different history between slut-shaming women and the power behind that and the control of women's bodies and the monitoring of women's bodies and everything with that versus a man feeling enough freedom to sleep around and normally congratulated for it and lifted up. So it is just very, very different dualities.
Yeah, like how women are always emphasized to be this pure virgin for the man. And so when you kind of like slut shame a woman, it's kind of, it's rooted in this purity culture, like Stella is saying. While with a man, it's not rooted in this like deep critique of personhood, if that makes
sense. Yeah. I mean, I like on like this topic saw something that I found quite interesting, and I'm not too sure on my perspective on it, but they were saying that like that like women like calling men like man whores and like womanizers for sleeping around and stuff is like their way of gaining back some power and like some privilege over like how men for like decades have been like objectifying women and expecting women to like be like this pure virgin, like soul for like only the person that they marry type of thing, or to have like a really small body count compared to men, because it's like an expectation of men to like sow their oats while they're young, like go around, you know, like have their like youthful age of like it's okay to like go a bit crazy, but for like women it's like no, like how could you like have a body count like that's higher than five?
Like how do you see privilege being you say that like using these terms kind of privilege the woman again?
Yeah, it's like I read somewhere it was like them gaining back like their like it's like their power and I guess kind of like privilege in terms of like self-respect type of thing by like using this language towards men when men have been using it towards women to oppress them for years.
But I guess when you use language that doesn't have a structural backing, I know I keep going back to this, but I feel like it is really important to understand. Like if you think of it in a Foucaultian way of this idea of this idea of discourses, right? Like discourses uphold a certain structure, but when you have these like labels that women assign to men that are just kind of floating, I don't see power being held. While when men use these labels, it is like a door with a building attached, if that makes sense. Like, it has concreteness. Yeah. It has, like, this material backing.
Yeah.
And so, therefore, it's powerful.
And even if words like man whore, things like that, had some sort of backing, using that back against men still isn't really reclaiming privilege or anything like that. It's kind of counterproductive. Like
I would say, yeah.
There's really no reason for it. It doesn't really do anything. It just, I just don't really think that is effective in reclaiming anything. Yeah.
Because, like, ultimately, saying those words isn't changing any of, like, the structural issues mm-hmm. that enforcing it. Like, calling a man whore for, like, sleeping around a bit doesn't change, like, the gender pay gap that we see. It doesn't change, like, the different employment opportunities mm-hmm. that are presented, like, mm-hmm. to men, to women. I mean,
the gendered labor.
Yeah, I saw this statistic that I thought was, like, shocking. It was this year in Canada, only, like, 35% of management positions are held by women. And it's, like, so that's 64% of them are held by men. And I think that's such a, like, stark difference mm-hmm. to then be, like, saying, oh, but, like, you called me, like, a man whore, so you reclaimed your power from that. Yeah,
and it's not even reclaiming your power and thinking about your own sexuality as a woman either. Like, even if we're just focusing in on that exact example, it doesn't change your relationship with yourself or anything like that. And then, yeah, building on everything that you guys were saying, it does. Like, there's just no even individual effect that saying something like that has, mm-hmm. other than maybe a bit of like gratification in some way that you're using something against somebody that's been used against you, but it just doesn't hold the same power.
Yeah,
definitely.
You had a question for Estelle.
Yeah, I have a question. It's a bit of a lighter one, but have you guys heard of penis envy?
No.
Okay, well, basically it is this kind of, I was reading, and some people were saying that misandry stems from being jealous of men and wanting to be like men, which is what I said before. I'm not sure if I'm allowed to say that. But anyways, I was wondering if you guys were ever, like, envious of men or jealous of them.
I don't know. I feel like I would critique that just on this, like, very biological basis of, like, a man is attached to this, like, genitalia.
Mm.
Because then when you think about other forms of gender, then it's kind of, it doesn't really make sense anymore. You know what I mean? I feel like
that's true.
When we go to this, like, very, like, genitalia-based understanding, it can...
You're right. Honestly, that was... I should have thought about that because it is, like, Sigmund Freud's very outdated, like, definition. But I think I was just trying to say, like, my main question was, have you guys been jealous of men?
I mean, I wouldn't necessarily say jealous of men, mm-hmm. but maybe, like... sort of jealous in the, like, opportunities that they get. Like, structurally, they, like, having, like, men, like, be considered more in, like, the job, like, sphere. Like, they get considered more for, like, the higher-up roles than women.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't say it's, like, jealous of men. It's more, like... that it should be equal consideration if you have, like, the same qualifications. Like, why, mm-hmm. like, are they, like, what is it that they have that gets them considered more, type of thing? I mean, it goes back to the patriarchal, like, structures and, like, put in place for women, but I don't think I've ever really been jealous of men.
Mm-hmm. I guess I just kind of, like, when I think about this idea of, like, burden and responsibility, how I just see in a lot of my life where with cleaning, with, like, I'm just going back to this whole, like, the realm that women are assigned to, one could say, or relegated to, is, like, the realm of the home. Even when we have, you know, this upsurge of female labor in the West... like, not female labor, but paid female labor,
mm-hmm.
In the West, as women are entering the, you know, the labor market more, we have this sort of, like, nominal transition away from the home. But when you look at the housework and the domestic work done, it is still done predominantly by women, and the responsibility is held by women. And so in that sense, I have this kind of like wish for a struggle away from that.
Mm-hmm. And I think that kind of goes with, again, if people are saying that, oh, women are only, you know, being misandrous because they're jealous of men, they just want to feel that kind of power. But then if we look at these explanations of your guys's, it's not just of men, the individual, like we're talking about structural still. And it's just, I guess, another reason in the whole realm of misandry that people could be involved in it.
Yeah, I don't know how to like couple with misandry with like other revolutionary politics, because mm-hmm. like the thing that is really important to understand is that, of course, you know, with these forms of oppression, we do need men, and we are united in class oppression, like in this class-based society. And so we do need to unite and to overthrow the class system and the patriarchal system and the white supremacist system, the ableist system, and so on. And so in that sense, I don't want to like isolate so much of the revolutionary potential from each other, because then it's just furthering this gender division and kind of invisibilizing the shared form of oppression that we face. Mm-hmm. And if that makes sense. I mean, I don't know. I was reading about how misandry can be very white feminist, in the sense that, like the phrase of course, like kill all men. This black woman was talking about how black men in the United States have been killed on the basis of like for a white woman, if that makes sense. Like this very like racialized form of gender identity. It's I don't know. I feel like in that sense, this woman was talking about how when you talk about like kill all white men, it's different. But when you think about kill all men, she says it's kind of like furthering this violence against, you know, racial minorities. And also this like Palestinian woman was talking about how she sees death happen everywhere. And I quote, she says, with whiteness centered and protected. And so in that sense, when we have this sort of like kill all men rhetoric, like what kind of privilege are we coming from? Because if you're in the Palestinian resistance struggle, you need to unite to confront the imperialist power. But on the other hand, it is important to center like gender oppression for liberation. What do you guys think about that?
Yeah, I see what you're saying. Definitely. It is just, I'm curious to know like how far the kill all men saying actually goes to that point. Because what you're saying, yeah, there are definitely valid, like, yeah, there are groups of men that have been institutionally marginalized by white women, by white people. But with the kill all men slogan, I guess it could be interpreted that way, but I know that is definitely not the intent of it. But I think if there is room for that type of interpretation, we shouldn't use it.
I mean, I guess it kind of, yeah, I see what you mean, like how far does it actually go? It was just food for thought. But I guess with the whole idea of misandry, like as someone who thinks about class quite a bit, it kind of puts like a question on the table of like, how do you couple class struggle and the uniting of the proletariat, of the working people, with misandry?
The thing is, like, we've been talking about misandry not as an anti-man thing this whole time. Like, we've been talking about it as a critique of the patriarchy, of the CERN system. So I don't see why it can't be compatible with class consciousness.
How is misandry different than feminism, then?
I feel like it's not that different. Yeah. I think it is kind of a different, I think it is like a, that's a hard question. Yeah, because I think people can be misandrists and not be feminists, definitely.
And can you be a feminist and not a misandrist?
Yeah.
Well, then do you think that misandry is really just about this, like, systemic understanding, or is it also about like critiquing men? Because I like, at least for my definition of misandry, it involves this like critique of men.
Yeah, it is also critiquing men, but in the ways that men are acting because of the patriarchy that we have.
And I guess you could think of it as like, it is important to not just like, just because you have this class struggle or this liberatory struggle, doesn't mean that you have to just subdue all of your, you know, gendered evaluation of the world. It is still important to center feminism and center gender liberation within these struggles, and so therefore critique these misogynistic behaviors, critique these like patriarchal practices.
Yeah, but I mean, that is a good question, not just for feminism in general, but any kind of forms of oppression within the working class. Like, how can we get everyone to come together when there's a lot of oppositional things going on?
Yeah, and especially understanding that it's not the like men that have established, like, it's not like a male plot. It's patriarchy is very much rooted in a class division necessitated by like this gender division of labor. You know what I mean? Like, of when you like understanding that, how does that couple with misandry? But then also seeing misogynistic behaviors playing out every single day and talking to men and just experiencing that again and again and again and experiencing the violence. And the,
yeah, it is difficult. Yeah, I don't know what to say to that. It is, how do we unite people when everyone is pretty divided?
Right, and understanding that this division is like, is fabricated, and to genuinely fight against these divisions, we need to unite. It's like this odd mixture.
Yeah. And the divisions stop us from being able to unite, so it's also a cycle.
Yeah, exactly.
I think as well, like, the all of the like divisions seen in society, they are all intersectional with each other. So in a way that there's like a link between all of them to unite them, but then the link, like the intersectionality of them all, kind of gets lost a bit because you're focusing just on like each division as like a single thing rather than looking at them like all together.
Yeah, when you look at it in like a class-based context, then it kind of comes to light in that sense. Like, how does ableism about labor and the value of a person about labor, how is white supremacy, you know, revolving around this exploitative system, around like these categories that legitimized slavery in the eyes of so many, and gender, you know, like, and then when we look at it through a class-based context, and then it's just a hard question. But we have a song for you, and maybe we'll figure it out. So this is a song Tamara and I would listen to all the time back in Amsterdam. La Crescida by Los Espíritus. Oof, I don't know how that pronunciation was. The cover art is really beautiful. You guys should take a look. Yeah, enjoy. I really like the twangy sounds.
Welcome back to Intravenous. This is CJSF 90.1 FM. I'm Stella.
I'm Logan.
I'm Rebecca.
And we just want to thank you guys all for listening to this episode. And
we'll be back next Wednesday at 10 a.m. We're gonna reflect, and we're going to get back to you on our question.
So, yeah, we'll see you next time.
See you next time.